Hi, I'm Tamina, gender equality activist and sales professional at a global technology company. When I graduated from college in 2017, I was struggling to figure out how adulting works. School did not properly prepare me for some of the most basic things that my young professional life would eventually throw at me. If this sounds familiar, please join me on this journey to empower young women who are, just like myself, still in search of a fulfilling, purpose-driven life. Welcome to FemHive. Hi, ladies. Today I'm joined by Sammy Siegel. Sammy is a software engineer at Duolingo and a vocal feminist. While still in high school, Sammy co-created an online petition asking the Presidential Debate Commission to select a woman to moderate the 2012 presidential debates for the first time in 20 years. The petition garnered over 180,000 signatures and was successful in the end. For her amazing efforts, Sammy was mentioned in Chelsea Clinton's book, It's Your World. It's great to have you, Sammy. Wow, the success of that petition is pretty impressive.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very honored.
Oh, of course. So we just heard it in the intro, Sammy. Your interest in gender equality advocacy clearly started at a young age. How did you find your feminist voice?
Yeah, I consider myself to be pretty lucky in having some early exposure to social justice history. I grew up in a fairly progressive town in New Jersey, which you have visited, and learning about social movements of reform was actually a core part of the high school curriculum, which I think is pretty unique. I'm not sure if other high schools do that. But I was a part of this small learning community called the Civics and Government Institute within my school, and that focused on the study of citizenship, government, and other social issues. So my history classes and electives within the program actually taught me about the different waves of feminism and introduced me to a lot of feminist literature. I actually joke that I've been forced to read The Feminine Mystique 20 plus times throughout my educational career, whether that's in high school or in my gender studies classes. But I think this program in high school is the first time I had to read it, and the first time I was exposed to that part of history. So I think all of this provided me with the context and the language to start understanding women's issues and how my own gender identity was affecting how I experienced the world. And as you mentioned, around the same time, I was also starting to work on this petition with two other women from my school. And as you said, it got a lot of national attention. We were interviewed on a lot of major news outlets, including CNN, The New York Times, NPR, and more. So I was getting this kind of public voice for feminist issues. And I think through meeting other women who were working on similar activism efforts, women who were focusing their life's work on advocacy, I really tried to find how I fit into that world and how I was excited to be a part of it. So on a more personal level, that was my first experience with activism, and it solidified my passion for women's advocacy. Looking back, I definitely think my feminist voice has evolved a lot. High school was great for introducing me to the basics, but to be honest, I think my education was pretty whitewashed. And it was really my gender studies classes and the women's organizations I was involved in college that helped me understand a more intersectional feminism in theory and in practice, which is a lifelong journey that I'm still on today. And I think it's also true that at some point it feels almost impossible not to find your feminist voice when you're a woman, and especially when you're a woman in male-dominated fields. And also at Duke, I was on a campus that felt dominated by a lot of different patriarchal structures, including the fraternal system, among other things. So my ability to live and thrive in college felt pretty dependent on finding women-owned spaces and trying to evolve that voice of mine.
Wow. I'm actually kind of jealous that you had access to all these amazing social movements and social justice resources in high school. I kind of wish I had that curriculum in school. And for us to further educate ourselves and others, it is important, like you said, to have the context and the language to start understanding women's issues and how, like you said, our own gender identity is affected how we as women experience the world, because only when we know how to properly address these issues, we can move forward as a society.
Yeah, and this isn't to say that the responsibility needs to be on women to educate themselves about their own oppression. I think this is a common theme in social justice work, that the responsibility really does need to be on people who may have these internalized biases. But I think for me, it was personally productive and helpful to seek out these communities of women when I did acknowledge that I was experiencing things like microaggressions and macroaggressions that my male peers maybe weren't experiencing and didn't see. So I think it was the development of my quote unquote feminist voice was more out of me wanting to find the support rather than feeling compelled to by some other like high school education.
I see. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It is not on us to educate ourselves or others, like, you know, specifically privileged white heterosexual men on matters of oppression. And that applies to really any minority and underprivileged group. The privileged people have to proactively educate themselves and be a little uncomfortable by owning their own mistakes. Anyway, we could talk about this topic alone for ages. But Sammy, today you are a badass female coder for one of the world's leading startups. But if I remember correctly, you were initially planning on studying public policy in college, right? How did you end up majoring in computer science?
Yeah, I actually came into Duke telling everyone I was going to double major in math and women's studies. But it was hard to see a direct connection between those two fields. I used to say they were completely polar opposites. One's super computational and one is more about the social sciences and thinking about gender theory. But as I mentioned, I was also involved in a small learning community that focused on civics. And that was really my motivation for thinking about public policy at first, since I had really enjoyed learning about policy in school, and I could draw that direct line between policy and women's issues, of course. So I enrolled in a Duke focus program for classes on civic service. And this was basically a program that emulated my high school learning community. I was just trying to find the same exact thing in college, especially my first year when you really don't know what you're doing. And I also signed up for the first math class in the major, but I had one remaining course to pick. And my father suggested taking Computer Science 101 since my cousin had recently graduated with a comp sci degree and they both thought that I would like it. And because I was a first year student, I was clueless enough to take their advice without really thinking about it. But I feel very lucky that I did because I ended up not really loving my public policy courses. And I think it was mostly because of some of the professors that I didn't quite agree with. And I really was gravitating towards math. I think it's this crazy cool subject that I still don't completely understand. But at least at Duke, the major was a lot more theoretical than I was expecting. And I was trying to find something a little bit more applied. And in the nerdiest way possible, I found myself really excited to work on my computer science projects. Tamina has made fun of me for this in the past.
True.
Started working on these small assignments to solve problems using Python algorithms. And I genuinely could not wait to work on them, which was a really big sign for me that this was something that I wanted to keep pursuing. It felt like this perfect combination of a lot of my interests, because there was certainly so much math involved, but it had a lot more real world applications. And especially now, like especially given current events right now, Black Lives Matter movement, it's easy to imagine how technology can work towards social justice. So I think computer science has really appealed to my mathematical side, but with a lot more meaning just beyond theory. And I also think it has made me feel really smart, which is something that I don't talk about too much. And I've tried to unpack because I think some of that sense of intelligence is because I wasn't surrounded by other women or folks who looked like me. And that's a lot of internalized misogyny for you. But I think there is some value in feeling really smart in your field and knowing that even though something is difficult, you're passionate enough to keep working on it. So that's how I ended up here.
Well, you aren't just feeling really smart. You are super, super smart. Just hearing you talk about your journey is really inspiring. And I love how nerdy you are, Sammy.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely feel super nerdy when I talk about it sometimes. But I just found myself gravitating away from essays. I think at this point, I don't think I could write a full essay ever again. And I think a little bit more mathematically and algorithmically, I think.
Well, I think you are wrong because you could still write the most amazing essay.
Thank you so much.
Just saying that. To talk about something that's a little more serious. According to the National Science Foundation, women only earn 18% of computer science bachelor's degrees in the United States. The research cites you know, a variety of reasons for the lack of women taking science classes in general, a phenomenon that starts as early as middle school. But usually what it comes down to is the fact that in secondary school, less emphasis is placed on developing computer science skills in girls compared to boys. And as a result, once women get to college, they oftentimes lag behind their male peers. Furthermore, female students lack role models because most leaders in the field are men. What was your experience as a woman studying computer science like?
Yeah, the absence of women in my math and comp sci classes, I think I'll talk about both a little bit, has really forced me to reflect on how I got there. And I think I owe a lot of it to my father. He's a math professor and has always nourished my interest in math ever since I was a kid. He was always curious about what I was learning in my math classes and was quick to tell me when he didn't agree with my methods. In my family, we say it's a rite of passage for dad to make you cry while teaching you how to multiply, quote, the right way. My 12-year-old brother recently had this experience, so everybody's made it. I think the important thing to note is that he never treated me differently from my brothers. We were all encouraged to explore our mathematical sides. We all cried learning multiplication. And as a result, my brother, who's in college right now, and I have both decided to pursue computational degrees. And I also think it helped that one of my best friends in high school was really interested in math. We were always there to support each other. We were both on the math league team. And I wasn't afraid to ask her questions if I didn't understand something, which I think was really invaluable and something I didn't appreciate at the time, but have come to reflect on. So shout out to Sophia Abraham-Raveson, my math queen. Appreciate her. But yeah, I definitely started to notice the lack of women in my math classes in high school. And I think it's because women weren't necessarily given the same support as their male counterparts, the other male students in the class. The moment one of my female friends stopped acing the class completely, she would be encouraged to drop down into a lower level. And I saw this time and time again. And I think the only reason that I didn't feel encouraged to drop down is because I had my dad saying, no, you shouldn't. And I didn't see my male peers being treated the same way. And as I mentioned, I was one of two women with my friend Sophia on the math league team, which is super cool. I know, I was a cool kid in high school. Yes. Love the math league. One of these microaggressions, or maybe macro, depending on how you want to interpret it, as our teacher said to us, don't make me regret putting women on the team. And I think it was meant as a joke, but it certainly was not funny. Not funny at all. So, yep. And luckily, I had Sophia to laugh about it with. So it didn't end up affecting me too much, but it's definitely not great to hear from someone in leadership that kind of emphasizing these external things that you hear all the time. And this carries into college as well. I think my classes in math were a lot worse than comp sci when it came to representation. Once I was one of two women in a class of 20 students in math, and usually about 1/3 of my computer science classes were women. So it's better, but it's not great. And in my entire Duke career, I had two female computer science professors and one female math professor. It just so happened that my first semester, my first year, I had women teaching both, which is a crazy cool coincidence because I think this had a really strong impact on me, especially in math. The first class you take in the major is linear algebra, and it is no joke at all. It is so hard. This was my first college level math class, and it was truly like kicking my ass. And I was really ready to drop out. But my professor, who is the spectacular Lillian Pierce, please look her up. She took a specific interest in advocating for women in the class. She would openly talk about gender issues in math, and she made a point to tell me and other women that a few bad test scores does not mean that we did not deserve to pursue this field. And I think having that like active voice and the intentional perspective of a woman in math telling other women in her course not to feel discouraged was extremely powerful. And one small thing I'll always remember that she used to do is that she would have us write our student IDs on exams rather than our names. And there were two reasons for this. I think she had read the study that writing down a stereotypically feminine name before a math test can reduce a woman's test scores, because the idea is that writing down this feminine name intentionally reinforces, or sorry, not intentionally. I'm just going to start that sentence over. The idea is that writing down the name internally reinforces stereotypes that women aren't good at math. And it also prevented her from really knowing whose test was whose to eliminate any internalized bias that maybe she had, like internalized misogyny associated with those feminine names. So that's one super tiny thing that could be implemented in truly any class. And I think it made a big difference for me. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in math, please look up Lillian Pierce. She's badass in every sense of the word. And even if she does not remember me, she's the reason why I stuck with math and comp sci. I think it's also valuable to mention Susan Roger, who was my comp sci professor in my first semester, because she used to end all of her lectures with a spotlight on famous female computer scientists. And I'll say this time and time again, probably throughout this podcast interview, but I think there's something so valuable and validating in purely seeing other women thriving in the field. And yeah, there have been several points in my math and comp sci careers that I can point to for examples of misogyny and microaggressions, as we talked about. I can just go down my list of things. I used to notice in my first year at Duke that when I was telling people I wanted to pursue math, they would say, oh man, math is really hard. But when I overheard men saying the same thing, they didn't really get the same reaction, maybe because people thought they could do it, or they just didn't feel the need to reinforce to them that math is really hard. Again, that's a really small thing, but I think it's a perfect example of a microaggression. During my semester abroad as well, I was one of three women in a video game development class. And we would visit these video game companies, speak to different developers, etc. And in an anonymous mid-semester survey, which was asking for feedback on the class, I wrote that I wanted to talk to more women in the industry. The only developers we had interactions with were men. And actually, on one of our company visits to an all-man company, I saw a female sex doll on their desk.
No, you didn't.
It's not great.
Ugh.
And after the survey, after I submitted this feedback, we were learning about how to animate bounces in gaming software that we were using. And I shit you not, the example my professor used was a GIF of an animated woman's boobs bouncing. And he said, here's some representation of women in gaming.
No way. You can't be serious.
I'm extremely serious. I can have some comp sci people from, or the two other women in the class back me up on this. It was horrifying. And the most famous thing that I like to talk about, which is the worst piece of advice I have ever been given, was that I was told by an employee at the Duke Career Center that my resume may come off as too intimidating and feminist to the men in tech who would be reviewing it, which was clearly some bullshit because I have a job in tech and I did not get rid of any of the feminism or any of the women's organizations that I was involved in on my resume. So to that Duke Career Center person, please stop giving that advice. But I think this is the story of every woman in a male-dominated field. Everybody has these micro and macroaggressions that they experience. Discrimination is rampant. But for me, having active support from women, both as peers and professors, made all the difference in enabling me to literally ignore all the haters.
Wow. Okay. There is a lot to unpack here. First of all, I cannot believe that this professor is actually allowed to teach. That is a disgrace, and you should be fired right away for being such a misogynistic PIG. but second, a big, big shout out to your dad. We clearly need more male allies who encourage and support women in their lives to pursue STEM careers and help close gender gaps in various fields. Another big shout out to your two female professors, Lillian Pierce and Susan Roger. I'm so glad you had these women in your life, because without them, you might not be where you are today, like you were saying earlier. And I especially love the story you were telling about Professor Pierce making you write down your student IDs instead of your names on your exams to prevent the internalization of gender stereotypes and eliminate her own potential internalized biases. That's really powerful, and other professors should take note. And Sammy, earlier you were talking about that there was little female representation in your math and comp sci classes in college. Did you have any encounters with the infamous imposter syndrome as one of the very few women in your classes?
Yes, of course. I think getting over imposter syndrome has been and will be a lifelong pursuit for me and for, I'm sure, a lot of other folks. I'm actually hosting an intern at Duolingo right now, and she asked me how to overcome imposter syndrome and how to become more confident in her technical skills. And honestly, I think it's a really hard question to ask because, as I said, I'm still on that journey, and I don't think there's any right answer, and it's highly dependent on your environment, who you're working with. But I think I have suffered from a deep sense of imposter syndrome in the past. Specifically, when I was thinking about this question, I thought back to one of my software engineering internships in college. Because despite performing, frankly, very poorly in the interviews, I was offered an internship at this company, and I was really excited about it. Actually, at first, I was rejected. I received a rejection email after these interviews. And then a few weeks later, I got a call from the recruiter who said they changed their mind, which was strange, but I was excited enough about it to accept regardless. And software engineering in the industry, at least in my experience, is very different from studying computer science in school. I think a lot of the core concepts from classes still apply, but the day-to-day work is a completely different experience. And this is dependent on whether you're working on, personally, I do more mobile front-end development. And I think that's just not something that I learned in school. So it was a really big learning process. And it was my first time really working on an actual engineering team, my first time in this internship doing Android development. I had never even owned an Android phone. So suffice to say, there was a lot to learn. And I will also say I was the only woman on the team. So my confidence wasn't too high during my first few weeks, since it felt like even the most basic of things, like using GitHub, to any CompSci students listening here, using GitHub was really difficult and I didn't know how to do it. And on top of that, I also came across this document in which they had written down certain details about the interns, and I was actually labeled as someone who would need a lot of mentorship. I don't remember the exact wording at this point, but there was basically some official documentation out there that said I would need more handholding and attentive mentorship than the other interns. And you can imagine this really threw me. I was really unsure of my place already, and since I felt like my interviews had gone poorly, and I was struggling to learn everything I needed for the job, before I read this document, I was already not too confident. And all of this made me feel like I was just a diversity hire, like they had lowered the bar to hire another female intern. So yes, there is the imposter syndrome, and it's really hard to get over it when you feel like you don't have people around you who have experienced the same thing. And I felt like I couldn't talk to anyone because I didn't want anyone else to know that I had been labeled as needing more mentorship, whether or not that was true. And in order to kind of work through this, I was able to lean on a female mentor who I was introduced to through the Duke Technology Scholars Program, which supports women pursuing careers in tech. And I'm sure I'll talk about this more throughout this podcast. My mentor, she helped me work through ways to increase my confidence and gave me advice that I truly still use to this day. For example, when submitting code for review, she advised me to write comments in my pull requests to explain why I had made certain decisions. So this way, I'm validating all my methods and proving to the reviewer that I put in the work to think critically about the implementation. And I think this, among other things that she told me, made a huge difference. This mentor was also queer, like me, and it was so validating to hear about her background and her path to becoming an engineering manager and how I could sort of see myself in that role and on that path. My intern host was also great, even despite all the shit that I had in the internship. I think I received a lot of support from him. When I shipped my first bug, he actually took me out to ice cream. Rather than letting me stew in my anxiety, he said it was something to celebrate because it was an engineering rite of passage. And it's genuinely so funny to think back to it now, because I think the bug was that I made a button too big. And at this point, I have caused so much worse bugs. But I know it's part of the work. Everybody does it. And I'm not sure I would feel that way unless I had the support from my intern host way back then. And I'm hoping with my intern now, if she ever ships a bug, I will also take her out to ice cream. But yeah, I think imposter syndrome is something we all experience. It's really hard to get over. And it was only through the help of mentors that I was really able to find ways to try to convince myself that I had a space there and that I belonged there. And eventually did receive a return offer from this internship, despite being labeled as needing more mentorship, which we can sit here and unpack how probably sexist that is for days. But I think it's valuable to mention that after being able to lean on these mentors and receiving this advice and having that support system, I was able to kind of find my way, find that confidence, and that confidence really reflected in the work that I was doing and how I was involved on my teams and the company as a whole.
Thank you for being so vulnerable with us today, Sammy. It was really brave to share that internship story with us, and I'm really sorry you had to experience this in the first place. Clearly, these people were all wrong, since you absolutely ended up kicking ass and received a return offer in the end. So that's really all that matters.
Well, thank you, lovely. Even though you are not in computer science, you are my support system. So it means a lot.
Of course. We women gotta lift each other up, right? And also, please let's not forget that you also ended up receiving full-time offers for some of the most well-established tech companies out there. And many people, including male candidates, would have considered themselves very lucky to have had that many amazing options to choose from.
Oh, thank you.
Of course. Just telling the truth here, Sammy. So you were already talking about the tremendous impact women have had on your career trajectory, particularly two female math and comp sci professors. Why is it so important to have female role models in STEM, Sammy?
Yeah, I think the core of it is that representation really does matter. It's really hard to be what you can't see. That's some quote from someone. I don't remember who at the top of my head. But the idea is that without seeing women thriving in tech and in engineering leadership positions and in STEM fields in general, it's really hard to visualize yourself in those positions because you don't see other folks who look like you. And I think this is like a widely researched concept that it's really hard to pursue these things when you don't see people who emulate who you are. And I also think one of the most important things for me has been helping me navigate spaces where I may experience discrimination, where I may experience microaggressions, and where I feel like I may need to advocate for myself a little bit more. So my mentors have really provided me with ways not only to maintain my own mental health, but to build up my confidence and help advocate for changing the core institutional issues that facilitate and foster that discrimination. I think I'll probably talk a lot about how women can support each other and how programs can be developed to help women get into these positions. But at the end of the day, it's really important for these companies and institutions at large to take a deeper look and think about how they are perpetuating bias and how they are potentially blocking women from succeeding. So, of course, that's a really big endeavor, and nobody has really, well, not nobody, but it's really hard to figure that out for a single individual. And I think mentorship is one of the steps to get there. And also in the spirit of intersectionality, I think it's important to mention that finding role models that relate to other aspects of your identity is equally as important and valuable. For me, that meant finding queer women and finding Jewish women, as those are two other really important parts of my identity. But women need representation, as well as women of color, trans women, queer women, women with disabilities, everybody. It's not just women versus men. There's a whole lot else going on in there. So I think for me, role models were just a way for me to have a support system to lean on, to have people to talk to about the issues that I was experiencing. And I think just knowing that you're not the only person experiencing these things and potentially feeling like you don't belong in a space is just as important as the advice you receive on how to overcome that.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is hard to see yourself thriving in a role or in an industry where you don't see other people who emulate who you are. And again, going back to the topic of intersectionality, which again is so, so important, this truly does apply to other aspects of your identity as well. And I'm really glad you were able to lean onto some female queer mentors who help you navigate systemic discrimination. And speaking of emotional support, I know you were also very involved with many organizations on campus that cater to female STEM students' needs. In what ways have those safe spaces helped you throughout your time in college?
Yeah, I think these spaces were really essential for me. One of the best things I learned about myself in college is that I personally thrive when I'm connected to communities of women. And that's what motivated me to start working at the Duke Women's Center my first year, motivated me to apply for the Baldwin Scholars Program, among a bunch of other organizations. And especially within STEM, I think there's a lot of shared experiences among women. of dealing with microaggressions, being the only woman in the room, having colleagues mansplain things to you, and feeling like you can't take up as much space. And I think having communities of women provided me with a space to vent, first of all, and to feel validated and to get advice from women who have experienced the same shit. And I will say this time and time again, it is so valuable to just be validated and to have that community and to see other folks who look like you in your field. So while I did have some really amazing mentors who were men, they were never able to really relate to some of my problems. And I think women could almost always understand, echo that they've experienced it too, and provide advice that's been passed down to them by other women about how to handle it both internally within your own mindset and also externally through some level of advocacy. So I think the absolute best community that I was involved in was the Duke Technology Scholars Program, because this was directly impacting my career trajectory, and the network that I had. So this program was started my sophomore year with the intent to support women pursuing careers in tech. So first, they wanted to fix the pipeline issue by providing companies with a literal stack of resumes from highly qualified women so that there was no longer any excuse. And once these women were offered internships, they next wanted to fix the confidence issue by providing a network of female leaders in tech, among other things like events. They also provided housing, which I think is really important to mention. They paid for our housing. We all lived together. And not only did that construct a space through which we could talk to each other about the issues we were having, but the Bay Area is really expensive. And since we all had internships in the Bay Area, having someone cover our housing was really important, especially for smaller companies where they couldn't necessarily provide you with that stipend. So I know Duke is privileged in having the funding to be able to do this, but it was a really important thing for me to do. And I think I found the two sides of this approach, both the pipeline and the confidence targeting, really important, because I think while the pipeline is a really big issue, the needs for support doesn't just stop when your foot is through the door, of course. And I'm sure you've experienced this too, Tamina. There needs to be a lot of support within these institutions, and it's not just like getting the job is enough. I think that this kind of a program should be implemented in every single school. It was the best thing that I have ever done. I'm still in contact with many of the women that I lived with and one of my mentors, as I mentioned. And it was just so powerful to come home at the end of the day and live with a group of people who could understand my problems. It was a little feminist echo chamber, because I would complain about something I experienced at work, and one of my housemates would say that she'd experienced the same thing too, and here was how she was approaching it. So without feeling intimidated, I could ask questions to my housemates regarding anything from how do I do this animation on Android, so a very specific technical problem, to something like how do I negotiate for a higher salary. So I think DTech gave me the network and the vocabulary to be more confident in my place in tech. And I think this should serve as the inspiration for other colleges, because most of the women that I met through these programs are still working as engineers or data scientists or product managers with really high technical skills. So there are so many other organizations that I was involved in that I think really helped me get to this place. But the Duke Technology Scholars Program was the one that really paved that path for me to see, okay, this is how you get women into these positions, first of all, and here's how you support yourself once you're there.
I'm so happy you had that support system on campus. And I remember you telling me specifically about your great summer experience with DTech, where, you know, you're living with a bunch of fantastic women in the Bay Area. And yeah, like you said, I really do hope that programs like DTech will expand to other schools as well to maximize the impact they can have on the lives of so, so many more women to come.
For sure, yeah. And I think they're still figuring out, it's such a young program, so they're figuring out how to get alums involved. And I am actually planning to mentor someone this year who's working for Facebook remotely, of course, because of COVID, remotely out of Pittsburgh. And I think having that engagement and being able to share that experience from my side and see what it's like for her will be really great. And I think also a way to develop confidence for me has been mentoring other people, other women in tech. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And I just love that you went from being someone who actively sought out mentorship and guidance from, you know, older, more established women in STEM to now becoming a mentor yourself. I think that's fantastic. And Sammy, you've been in the workforce for about 2 years now. How has your experience as a woman in STEM been like in the real world, and what challenges have you encountered?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I think that CompSci in the real world is different depending on what you're doing. For me, I currently am doing iOS development, which is just not something that I learned in school at all. Duke is actually creating classes and programs around teaching students how to do mobile development now, but I think I was a little too late in the game. If I was studying computer science now, I would certainly be seeking out those classes. But for me, my education was more on the core concepts of computer science, on data structures and algorithms, and how to solve a problem computationally through code, which, of course, is super important in knowing how to do these other things like mobile development, but certainly had me feeling a little thrown at first in my job, because not only was I working in my first full-time job, but I was also doing a technology I had never worked with before. I like to say that I'm really grateful that Duolingo let me do this. I think they could have put me on an Android team because I had the Android experience. But I voiced wanting to learn iOS and was immediately put onto a team to learn Swift and Objective-C, which was a little intimidating because learning two new languages in your first job, of course, is a little scary. But I think I have a pretty unique experience right now. My team is all women engineers, which is crazy. And it's evolved. It did not start out that way, but slowly but surely, all the men have left the team and now we are all women. granted, there are only four of us, but I still think it's so incredibly rare. And I've been lucky enough to also only have female managers while at Duolingo, which has made a huge difference for me. My managers have been able to relate to a lot of my problems, and I have never really felt worried about bringing something up to them, whether it was me feeling like I had the imposter syndrome a little bit more this week than normal, or I was experiencing some microaggressions. I felt very comfortable bringing that up to my manager. And not only has my manager been able to validate me, but has also provided me with the advice that was passed down to her from other managers, other people in her life about how to address these issues and feelings, as well as bringing that up to further leadership and explaining to them how people on her team were experiencing these things. So the good thing is, and I want to talk about this more, that it's not all challenges. I felt pretty supported right now, which I think is due to the community of women at Duolingo and from my past experiences within communities of women at Duke. So it's not like you go into tech and all of a sudden all you're experiencing is discrimination and bias. I think there are ways to receive that support. And luckily for me, as I've said, I've always drawn support and encouragement from communities of women, and I was able to find that almost immediately in my job. So that's one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give, is even if you don't have a team that's all women, even if you don't have a female manager, there's got to be some women in your life that you can talk to and that you can reach out to and lean on. I think that is the biggest, the most important thing that I have found. But yeah, I mean, some of the challenges that I've experienced, I think, are similar to what I've talked about before, is just like everyone ships bugs. Everybody does it. And I can think specifically, I had a really bad bug within my first few months that essentially, without going too much into the details, caused traffic to decrease in China for a full month because nobody had discovered it. And of course, that's a really intimidating thing to figure out when you realize that you are the person responsible. But when I met with my manager to talk about it, she told me a similar story about how she created another really bad bug many years ago, and that everyone has these stories. It's all part of the learning process, and there's not blame put on to me as a specific developer for this. There are a lot of different processes that could have caught something, and it's all just about if you're working fast and if you're working hard, then things somehow slip through the cracks. That's totally fine. So I think while imposter syndrome is definitely still something that I struggle with, it's helpful to have that voice in the back of my head from my manager and from other people saying, like, it's okay, these things happen. It doesn't say anything about your place here. And one other story that I wanted to tell was from about a year and a half ago, Duolingo posted a photo of all the women of the company for National Women in Engineering Day. I think that was the holiday. It was something around supporting women in tech companies. And I was excited. I mean, they post this on their social media. I think it's exciting to have a company post something with your face on it. I'll be a little selfish. It was fun for me. but it actually received a lot of backlash on Twitter. And, you know, everyone says don't read the comments, but I did. And the comments were all, you know, like, why aren't you hiring the best people? Why are you prioritizing women? Why are you lowering your bar for women? Isn't this discrimination? Which we can both agree that's a lot of bullshit. And that's not really an argument that makes any sense to me. And the CEO released a statement after posting this photo to sort of defend himself and say, look, we're not lowering the bar for women. We are hiring the best people. And we're really proud of the women that we have. And we're trying to actively work towards hiring more. And I really appreciated having that post out there. And I think it was pretty well received. But of course, it's hard not to think about the backlash on Twitter. Sometimes you let those things seep in. But it's all about having that support and having that voice to say, like, people are going to have these opinions, but they're not right.
It's so great to hear that you've had a pretty positive experience at Duolingo so far. And I really, really love that you're part of an all-female team and that, you know, your female manager has been able to validate your feelings around things like the imposter syndrome, microaggressions, and discrimination in general. I think, again, that is so, so important. So aside from increasing the number of women in STEM fields, where do you see the biggest room for improvement when it comes to achieving gender equality in science, technology, engineering, and math?
Yeah, this is a complicated question because I think there's a lot of room for improvement, clearly. But for at least part of this, I'm going to preach the gospel of FEMS, which is of an organization I was involved in at Duke. FEMS stands for Females Excelling More in Math, Engineering, and Science. And this program taught hands-on STEM activities with fourth to sixth grade girls in the Research Triangle area. The goal was to build up confidence as early as possible. So we had about 100 plus undergraduate Duke women studying STEM fields who were serving as volunteers. And we engaged with 300 plus girls in local public schools. The program was completely free, thanks to some grant money from Duke and other outside donors. And because we were able to physically go into the public schools in the area, we were able to engage with students who may not have been able to seek out this program otherwise, may not have been able to afford it. And I think having it be free, having us go into the spaces and having the support from Duke really helped us develop this program that served as a really safe space and an encouraging environment for these girls to explore their interests in STEM where they may not be able to outside of the space. Our activities would range from things like making cells out of cookies to actually learning the basics of computer programming and a whole lot more in between. And because we had female Duke students as leaders, FEMS also introduced these girls to potential role models at a really young age. I used to tell the volunteers that whenever we had leftover time, they should show the FEMS girls what they've been working on, because I personally would show them some of my comp sci class work. Specifically, I remember getting a lot of oohs and ahs when I was showing them this Pac-Man game from my artificial intelligence class, in which Pac-Man was automated to try to survive the longest using various decision algorithms. And of course, the graphics of it were really exciting to them, but it was cool to also be able to explain that, like, my code did this. And we had just learned about some computer science related topics. And I was like, this is how you apply it to an actual real thing. So I think all of that, having this, the goal to having confidence built up this early on, I think it makes a really big difference. Providing girls with this space that's dedicated to them and dedicated to helping them experience STEM in a really positive light with other girls and helping them unlearn any internalized bias and developing the confidence to fight external bias. All of this I felt was really important, and it's a really unique program that I didn't have that growing up. As I said, I was lucky enough to have my dad and I was in math league with my friend, but there was nothing like this in my town and in my school. And I think I personally could have really benefited from it, and I hope it serves as the inspiration for a lot of other programs. I know FEMS exists in other schools now too, but I think I'm going to keep preaching it until it's in every school, until every girl has the opportunity to do something like that. And another story I like to tell is that at the student activities fair my senior year, when I was there for FEMS, I remember a Duke woman in her first year came up to the booth and asked about volunteering with us because she had participated in FEMS in elementary school and was now planning to major in physics in college. And I actually had to hold back tears because it was so validating for me and the work that we were doing, because now she wanted to give back and help other girls follow the same path that she felt encouraged to follow through FEMS and other things. And it was literal physical evidence of why these programs work and how they can continue this cycle of mentorship and support and of women supporting women. So that's my bit about FEMS. And I also think looking at how to support women in college, because I think support needs to exist at every step of the way. I think the like kind of two-pronged thing that DTECH does is a really good example of how this can work. Also, this is all specific to industry because that's where my experience lies. I think the answer could be different for research in other areas, but can all draw from the same kind of core concepts. So as I mentioned, the first thing DTECH did was fixing the pipeline so that companies no longer have an excuse for saying that they can't find qualified women to fill their software roles, because that is an actual lie. There are so many conferences and programs that actively fight to fix the pipeline. I felt genuinely claustrophobic at the Grace Hopper Conference for Women in Computing because there were so many women in attendance. So any company that says that they can't find women, that they can't find these resumes, is just not looking or is trying to use an ignorant and misogynistic excuse to explain away their all-male teams. Sorry, not sorry. There's no excuse anymore. The second thing, so DTECH, in order to fix the pipeline, started by establishing relationships with a few companies in the Silicon Valley area that were committed to hiring more women, that had reached out and said, look, we want to hire more women, and specifically we want to hire Duke women. So DTECH provided them with a stack of resumes, a whole database from Duke undergraduate women in computer science. So companies like Apple, Fanatics, LinkedIn, and Slack were some companies that signed on pretty early on in the game, as well as some other smaller startups that wanted to make sure their teams were diverse from the start, which also props to them. That's the way to do it. I think it's hard to fix a problem. So if you are starting a company, I think the first thing you need to think about is creating a diverse team and making sure that those processes don't have the bias. It's hard to fix it after it's already there. The second part of this is that they realized they needed to provide support for women in their internships because getting the offer wasn't enough. They wanted to make sure that all the scholars had the resources to navigate tech as young women. So as I said, they had mentorship with female leaders, networking and development events, free housing, everything like that was all really important. And I mentioned this before too, and I've talked a lot about how women can support each other and how women-led organizations can help bridge the gap. But the responsibility is also, if not more, on companies to put in the work to find women, to build programs to support them, and to eliminate bias in their own institutions. I think hiring women is the first step, and taking a look at how bias has seeped into your recruitment process is key. Questions I like to think about is, when these companies go to universities to recruit, do they connect with organizations that serve women and other underrepresented minorities? Do they host private events with these organizations to provide a safe space and a dedicated space for them? Do you have employee resource groups for women? This list can go on and on. I think this was something that I thought about when I was looking at what companies that I wanted to look at, because I didn't necessarily want to work for a company that wasn't already thinking about these questions, didn't have the support group for women, wasn't reaching out to groups with underrepresented minorities on campus. And I think it would be really helpful if more teams on different companies also thought about these things. And I think the next step is also supporting the women within your company and providing clear paths to leadership. Employee resource groups are a great way to start, but bigger companies also need to think about establishing mentorship programs between leaders and women early on in their career. I think my experience, I've only really worked at one big company, but it was really hard for me to meet people outside of just my intern class. And so establishing something like that, especially for underrepresented minorities in tech, is really key. And the last thing I'll say is that I think leadership should be really conscious of the people in their meeting rooms. They should speak up when there are no women or people of color or trans folk or other underrepresented minorities in the room. They should make a scene when they're invited to speak on a panel that lacks diversity. I think it's important not to force your underrepresented employees to lean in. It's more your responsibility to change things from the top. So any leaders are listening, please follow my advice.
Well, there you go. If you are a leader in your organization, please, please listen to Sammy's advice right there. It truly is on you to create lasting change by having those conversations and providing resources for underrepresented minorities in your company or organization. Mm-hmm. So, Sammy, going back to what you're saying in the beginning of the segment about FEMS was so, so wonderful. We've spent so much time today talking about how important it is to have female representation in STEM. So I know that being a female role model to these 4th to 6th graders will have such a profound impact on these girls. you're truly paving the way for future generations of badass women in male-dominated spaces. So thank you for that. Yeah, and I guess this is my last question for you today, Sammy. What advice would you give to women, you know, students and young professionals who are considering a career in a STEM field but are discouraged by the existing discrimination?
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I think finding female mentors finding female mentors as early on as you can is really important. They don't have to be within the same company as you. Finding some network of women I have found to be really important personally for me. I've also found it really helpful, as I've said, to have peer mentors, which I think is a little bit easier to find and easier to see, especially when you're a young woman just starting out. So this could be someone similar to your age in a similar position. For me, when I was at Duke, this meant undergraduate women in software engineering internships or pursuing comp sci degrees. And as I said, I think DTech and FEMS really helped me find those communities. But now this means women in the industry just starting their career, which I still have access to those communities, but I've also found within Duolingo, I have tried to maintain relationships with the other women who started with me so that I can have that support from them. Whenever I feel like I have a, quote, dumb question to ask, which truly it's never a dumb question, but I'm just too intimidated to ask someone, I reach out to another woman on the iOS team who just graduated college as well, because I know, first of all, she will not judge me, and second, that she will reassure me that the question is not ridiculous. And I think I like to serve this role for her as well. Sometimes I get questions from her too. This is the smallest thing that makes a huge difference for me. I think a big barrier to development is being afraid to ask questions that you feel like you should already know the answers to. And especially when it comes to technical questions, I have this fear that if I ask this question to somebody who's a little bit more senior, maybe like a senior man software engineer, I'm going to get judged. I'm going to have my performance reflect poorly on me. So I think it's been a learning process to understand that everybody has these questions. That's also part of the imposter syndrome. But it's just learning how to develop within your specific environment and learning who you can ask, who you wouldn't be intimidated by, and who will provide you with the support that you need. That has been really valuable for me. I'll say it again, finding communities of women in tech is really important. I think most major cities have some kind of organization. I really found it valuable to find a volunteering opportunity where you can support younger girls in tech. I think I draw a lot of inspiration from serving as a mentor. So specifically in Pittsburgh, I've taught some coding classes to girls in a program at Carnegie Mellon. I've been involved in DTech as a mentor myself. I used to say that I think I got a lot more out of FEMS than the participants did sometimes, just because their excitement and their motivation was super contagious. Math and computer science are not easy subjects, both in the content and in how I felt I was being treated as a student at times. So it was easy to feel discouraged, but having a group of girls who were genuinely excited to hear about what I was doing gave me a lot of confidence and validation. And I think the same is true about finding women who are just a few years younger than you, like mentoring a first-year student when you're a junior or a senior, or mentoring someone who's just starting their career when you're a few years out. Sharing your knowledge and supporting your community is a really great way to kind of feel more confident in yourself, and you'll be surprised by how much it gives back to you. But yeah, I know I've said this again, I'll say it again. It's not your responsibility to completely eliminate bias in your field. That shit's impossible to do alone, and it should be on the people who perpetuate misogyny and racism and discrimination at the leadership and structural level. I think we can tell women how to find support to overcome bias, but at the end of the day, it's up to leaders in these institutions to create programs and policies and do that anti-bias work. So the Duolingo CEO, this is a quote that I like, he has a motto for hiring of, "I'd rather have a hole than an asshole." I think that's a great place to start.
Very well said. And let's end on that high note. Thank you so, so much for joining me today, Sammy. As always, I'm so impressed by you, and I know today's conversation will encourage some young women out there to follow in your footsteps. So thank you again for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. These questions were really great and having me reflect on my experience. I found it to be really valuable, so hopefully someone else does too.
Oh, I'm really glad these questions helped you reflect, and I already know that many women out there will find listening to your unique journey and your advice incredibly valuable. And if you all out there would like a chance to win a one-on-one conversation with Sammy, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram for more info on how to be the lucky winner of a valuable coaching session with Sammy. And that concludes our show. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Since we're just starting out, it would be amazing if you left us a positive review on Apple Podcasts and shared FemHype with all your female coworkers and girlfriends so we can empower as many young women as possible. Make sure to also follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm Tamina Stoll, and I hope you will be tuning in again next week. Take care, ladies.